Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. In his address to a joint session of Congress, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spent a good portion of his speech attacking Americans who have been protesting Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. The majority of lawmakers in the chamber responded with a standing ovation. Crosstalking Netanyahu's address to Congress, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. Also in New York, we have Stanley Cohen. He is a human rights lawyer. And in Beirut, we cross to Esteban Carrillo. He is a news desk editor for The Cradle. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Lionel, let me go to you first, since you are in the fishbowl officially for this program on a weekly basis here. How do you account for the violence and the protesting outside of the venue of Congress, and the majority of the lawmakers in the chamber itself greeting, listening to Netanyahu, gave him a standing ovation? Kind of an interesting split screen, don't you think?
Well, interesting. A couple of points here. First, as far as violence goes, Peter, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm a conspiracy analyst. And whenever I see somebody do things which I think would necessarily hurt a particular cause, the first part of me, the suspicious part of me always is, are these agents provocateurs? Or, so I don't really know. And we can talk about that. That's number one. What I think was the most important, which I don't understand, was, can anybody please tell me why Mr. Netanyahu received more security than President Trump did? When President Trump, every single day, I know for a fact, he can't even keep track of the amount of threats, where we had a Secret Service director who said, well, that was a slanted roof and, you know, we might fall. And in watching some of the coverage from yesterday from people like others who were doing live streaming, I heard somebody say they had NYPD.
Yeah,
there.
They did.
I mean, it looked, it, so I'm thinking, wait
they
a
did.
Minute.
They did.
I'm in New York and I cross the street and I risk my life. So why isn't NYPD here? And so I don't understand this inordinate, this dissimilarity of protection. I'm not saying there should be no protection, but can anybody tell me why President Trump gets nothing?
Well, Lionel, I can add to, since you're talking about security, I can add to that. Why was there the stand down on January 6th? Because they certainly didn't have a dearth of police officers that could have been deployed. But we go astray here. Stanley, what does this say about American foreign policy when it comes to Israel? Because the way Netanyahu spoke is as if the foreign policy is the same, that both countries have the same foreign policy, and both countries are the same country. He spoke as if he was an American. Stanley.
Listen, I find the paradox of media and politicians decrying the so-called violence outside, which was really a demonstration, not much more, being brought to us and raised by the most violent country in the world right now, being brought to us by a country that has been supporting the genocide, or by people that are supporting the United States in its march to further genocide against Palestinians. So that's the glaring double standard. The notion that the emperor has no clothes was once again on full display. This is now the fourth time that Netanyahu has come to Congress to spew his lies, his propaganda, his hate, his violence, and his manipulation. Now, yes, you had numerous members of Congress standing and cheering for him. If they thought it would garner votes for their position on their side, they would cheer for 16 cows showing up and eating grass in the room. So it was once again a stage fest where the Zionists and AIPAC and the pro-Israeli lobby, largely Republicans, and I'm not going to let the Democrats off, because the fact that you don't go to a speech by a warmonger doesn't forgive you for the fact that you continue to fund the death and destruction in Palestine. So there's this double standard throughout yesterday and now today. The notion of violence, yes, there's violence every day against Palestinians, every day funded by billions of U.S. dollars. The notion that he received the cheer from people in Congress, well, yes, they're warmongers themselves.
Yep.
So I think we need to be careful to back away from this double standard. It was once again a freak show. Once again, Netanyahu showing and spewing his hate and his anger and his violence and his distortion for political purposes for his crowd back home and for Trump's crowd in the United States here
and
now.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Esteban, let's go to you in Beirut. I mean, the standing ovations, it was like circus seals standing every time. They were waiting on every word coming out of his mouth. But Netanyahu can't get a standing ovation from any group of people in Israel right now. There's another, oddity to this whole story. He's intensely disliked in Israel, and he gets a bear hug in the United States.
Well, indeed, by some counts, he got over 50 standing ovations. Truly a circus show like none that has been seen before.
I think the only competition would be Stalin in the 1930s. Keep going.
Indeed. It's just absolutely a ridiculous display. And on top of this, as he's spewing just the most ridiculous lies, things that have already been disproven, the Hamas rape stories, the babies in the oven, the beheaded babies, all of these things that we know for a fact at this point, that there's no evidence to prove them, that Israeli investigators have not been able to prove that any of these things happened. He goes on Congress and gets standing ovations for saying these things. And yes, exactly as you're saying, this is a man who's only saving, the only thing that is saving his hold on power is this war, right? Because this is a man that even before October 7, a large portion of Israeli society was looking to get rid of him over the whole judicial overhaul situation. And now, since 7 October, he has failed to recover, more than a handful of captives from Gaza. He continues to stand in the way of a ceasefire deal, to sabotage it. He continues to just perpetrate the most heinous war crimes. And this is the person that gets just a standing ovation. I think, more than 50 standing ovations, really. I think this was just on display how out of reality, out of touch, the U.S. political class lives in, right? Because as we have said already, the fact that some members of Congress didn't go, maybe the fact that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden weren't there, doesn't mean that they don't support Netanyahu, right? They just mean that they weren't there for that speech. They're going to meet with him today. They're going to send more bombs. Bombs have been reaching Israel essentially every 4 days, shipments of 2,500-pound bombs that keep being dropped on homes, on houses, on tents. Right? Gaza right now, 83% of Gaza is under forced evacuation orders. There is no safe zone. You have 2 million people just moving from left to right, from north to south, hoping that today is not the day.
And Esteban, mentioning a ceasefire, we have to point out to our viewers that the only time hostages have been released when there was a ceasefire. So we do have a precedent. Let me go back to Lionel in New York. Netanyahu called protesters useful idiots, but I think the people that were in attendance in that chamber, they're the useful idiots.
Well, these are the various tropisms that Hamas you must know this. And by the way, forgive me because I'm in this surreal Dolly Dada. I don't know, Ingmar Bergman movie. I've got the president, who is in some kind of weird AI animatronic. I've got a woman who cacinates every 3 minutes, who very well could be the next president, and I have a Congress that on Tuesday, and with a country, by the way, who thinks nothing when Zelensky and Netanyahu show up, and they're stopping everything. And if you ask people, what are you doing? Who is in charge here? But you mentioned, Peter, the trope is simply this, that if you stand up for the right, however you want to phrase it, you are a dupe of Hamas, you are anti-Semitic, you're anti-Zionist, and they say this, and you would not believe, if you read the news here, there almost is like an auto, like a complete, like when sometimes you type something and it will complete. If you put anti-Semitic, as though anybody who is against either genocide, war crimes, massacres, whatever you want to call it, is making a statement about Judaism. Yes. And we have not, and we cannot get past this. And we have this comatose media that themselves don't say, wait a minute, let's at least get the phrase right, with all due deference to actual.
Let me throw that to Stanley. Stanley, it's been a good 9 months now. Does the slur being called an anti-Semite, does it carry the same kind of punch? Because I'm really tired of hearing
it. I've got to tell you, what's going on in the Middle East and with U.S. money and dollars is absolutely anti-Semitic. And you had a meeting yesterday.
In that sense, yes, yes.
Well, if I may, you've got one person, Netanyahu, who wants to murder Arabs. And you've got, in the United States, you've got anti-Semites, namely Biden, who wants to help him to murder Arabs. Or he's meeting with Trump, who wants to own Arabs. So it is anti-Semitism. The one area where AIPAC has been remarkably, and ADL, successful is convincing people that the Semites are European Jews, that the Semites are people from France, are people from London, are people from Brooklyn, are people from Germany, but not the original indigenous people that have not left their homelands since day number one. So this distortion of anti-Semitism is the one area, above all else, besides Netanyahu coming and talking about Israelis being victims once again, especially Israeli Jews, where they've been most successful. This stagecraft, which was again the 50 cheers yesterday, how many, I didn't watch it, as many standing ovations as he got, is all part of this surreal stagecraft, which ultimately comes down to one thing, this pernicious, deadly, malignant relationship between the United States and Israel. And I'm one of the few people that does not see the United States as being owned lock, stock, and barrel by Israel, but Israel being a dutiful surrogate for the United States to carry out its policies of genocide, be it on the ground, be it in the bank, be it through sanctions in the region. So this whole doublespeak is just bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, Stanley, it's interesting. I will admit, like you just said, I didn't watch the speech. I read the speech because I knew we were going to talk about it in this program. But I just couldn't stomach watching the lies that he spewed one after another. Even his own military disagrees with him. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Netanyahu's address to Congress. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Netanyahu's address to Congress. Okay, let's go back to Esteban in Beirut. One of the things I found remarkable reading this speech is how American foreign policy, again, this is the Israeli prime minister, how American foreign policy should move forward. Which obviously, in the interest of the United States, would be backwards. But that's another issue here. He mentioned something called the Abraham Alliance, which would basically be a NATO-like alliance. I don't know who would run the alliance. The United States runs NATO, but I think in this case it would be the Israelis would be running this. And essentially, it would be an alliance directed against Iran. Again, I mean, who is running the show here? Who's running American foreign policy in the Middle East? Lionel has already pointed out we have a president of the United States that, you know, we have to check on him every once in a while to see if he's still with us. We have a vice president that's been anointed. She is avoiding this topic, at least for now. I mean, you know, but it's Benjamin Netanyahu who's deciding which direction to move forward. It's really quite remarkable and extremely dangerous. Go ahead.
It's quite remarkable indeed. You know, yesterday it really felt like the king coming home, right? And all of his loyal subjects just tripping over each other to pay homage, to pay respect, right? This whole Abraham Alliance idea, it's ridiculous, first of all, right? What is this going to be, a Middle East NATO led by Israel? With whom? With the UAE and their army of Indian migrants, with the Saudi Arabia, who has already been kicked in the ass by Yemen, with Jordan, who cannot, you know, move a finger without the U.S. go-ahead, with Egypt. It's just ridiculous. It's truly absurd. And I think, you know, this whole idea that Netanyahu tried to present yesterday, right, that and I'm actually surprised that he didn't take any visual aids to just show us how bad Iran is and how Iran is behind everything. Iran is behind the protests. Iran is behind the ICC. Iran is behind the ICJ. Yeah. Iran is behind absolutely everything.
Well, Esteban, don't forget that there is a theory that Iran was behind the attempted assassination of Donald Trump as well. Keep going.
Yes, Iran is behind everything. You know, Iran is just the ultimate evil in the world. But, you know, here's what's interesting to me about these little discourse that they keep bringing up, the Zionist leaders, when they say, you know, Iran is funding the anti-genocide protests and et cetera, et cetera. What you're doing is you're conflating Iran with opposition to genocide. You're saying Iran and the people who are opposed to genocide are on the same side. Yep. Isn't that supposed to be a good thing? Isn't it stopping a genocide, opposing the mass killing of a population, a good thing? You know, in this case, what is the thinking here, right? It's like a five-year-old's argument. Everything and everyone I don't like, it's Iran. Everything and everyone I don't like is Hamas.
You know, it's interesting, Lionel, one of the lines the prime minister spoke, our enemies are your enemies. Can you explain that to me? I mean, so the United States should go to war with any country or group that Israel doesn't like. I mean, did the American people sign up for that?
Well, is this a version of the enemies of my enemies, my friend? And well, what about, would our enemies be Israel's enemies? Or does it work the other way around? I've got to say something, and I'm going to bring this to the most ridiculous level. Whenever Mr. Netanyahu speaks, I think somebody tells him either have a line or have a prop. When he had the fuse of the the Roadrunner bomb, Acme, you know, with that red line, remember that? That just motivates us. When he did his, we're not going to call him Shecky Netanyahu, but when he did the line about gays for Hamas, whatever, gays for Gaza is like being a chicken for KFC. That ridiculous throwaway actually captivated more people, even though nobody could understand what it was that they were laughing about, what it was that the connection, maybe perhaps, I don't know if it's called pink wash. I have no idea. When I heard this, I thought, that's going to be the line. Sure enough, I went straight to social media,
yep.
One after another. That was it. So I don't know if it's because of his brilliance in knowing how to target a particular meme or theme or trope, or are we that silly? Do we miss? Is this all it takes to divert the attention of what's really going on? Apparently so. I answered my own question.
Yes, you did. And Stanley, I mean, that's a very, it's interesting that Lionel mentioned that, because I wrote that down too, but I wasn't exactly sure how I would use it. But the fact of the matter is, genocide is put into the context of humor. Is that was the attempt?
Well, look, the proverbial victim is Israel. The proverbial promoter of victimization is Netanyahu. Israel has thrived for 76 years now on being the proverbial victim while it has attacked Lebanon on multiple occasions, while it's slaughtered or displaced or held captive or hostage 2 million Palestinians. It's the proverbial victim. It's interesting to see the proverbial victim always slaughtering, using phosphorus bombs, using cluster weapons, displacing, destroying, and leveling. And they come to the United States, which is the proverbial liberator, by victimizing everyone else. So this is the perfect marriage, especially keep in mind the political tenor and tone of the United States right now. Yeah. You've got Netanyahu, who's doing everything he can do to stay out of jail, who has 3 pending indictments against him. You've got Biden and Harris, who have supported arming the genocide every day of the week and refused to impose the Arms Export Control Act. You've got Trump, who wants to run to win to avoid going to federal prison. So meanwhile, you've got all these victimizers making all these deals with each other, selling rafts in the middle of the Sinai to avoid prison, to promote themselves, to benefit themselves, and meanwhile, they're killing, displacing and torturing millions of people. So the notion that Netanyahu would come to speak, it's like coming to speak to his own family.
Yeah.
Because everyone in that room has an agenda. Because everyone in that room is concerned about one thing and one thing alone, maintaining their personal power. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how many people die. Okay. It doesn't matter how many children are slaughtered. It doesn't matter how many people are rendered displaced. It doesn't matter how many complicit deals the Abraham Accords is what they're really talking about. It takes, at the end of the day, this is the privilege of the West doing anything and everything it can to maintain its privilege at the expense and the cost of the human rights, the dignity, the liberty, principle, and justice for millions of people of color, for Muslims and Christians on the ground in their own homeland.
I couldn't agree more. Esteban, going back to you in Beirut, I surmise part of this trip, it's always PR when it comes to Bibi Netanyahu, but I have the the deep worried sense that he went there on a mission to actually expand the war into the country where you are right now. There seems to be almost nothing that will stop that at this point here. Israel has failed in Gaza. It's failed to get its captives back. So to keep the war going, you have to expand. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, on October 7, Israel suffered such a huge defeat, right, that they haven't been able a single day since then to regain that sense of deterrence that they once had. Now the north of Israel is completely lost to them. Hezbollah has implemented a buffer zone in Israeli territory for the very first time. This has hurt the Israeli economy. This has hurt them, you know, in many, many ways. This has make them feel a pain that they haven't before. And yes, it's 100% true what you are saying. Netanyahu is in Washington to get permission, right, to get the backing of the U.S. to expand the war on Lebanon. And now apparently he did get the permission because just as we're talking right now, there are some reports coming out that say that officials in Washington have given the go-ahead to Netanyahu to expand the war.
Okay, so we're having a small technical issue with you. Let me go to Lionel here. Lionel, we're rapidly running out of time. What is next here? I mean, how does this play into the campaign? Or is the genocide in Gaza and the violence in the West Bank, is that just going to be pushed aside? We'll be watching it here, but the campaign will take precedent?
The thing that the Democrats are worried more about than anything is Minnesota. In fact, they always talk about the two-state solution, and the joke is Michigan and Minnesota. There is going to be a debate coming up, which we think, between President Trump and by the way, don't be surprised, because she is going to, under the 25th Amendment, she will assume the position of president. Kamala Harris will be the acting president. She will be an incumbent. And during the course of a debate, if President Trump were to ask her flat out, yes or no, do you believe that Israel has committed genocide? Just right there, just answer the question, according to the ICC or ICJ. Watch what she will do. She equivocates on everything.
But Lionel, I'm sorry, but I don't think that will even be brought up in the debate, because they're both on the same side.
But it will cause
Stanley, go ahead, jump in.
Let me intervene. The bottom line is this, and I'm not proposing this out of good faith or good cause. Harris needs young women and men. Harris needs people of color. And the big issue for that group, those millions of voters out there, is the genocide. I said months ago that Biden was done when millions of young women and men hit the streets in protest. I said months ago that when that body politic is saying no, that he was done. So you can talk about, people can talk about showing his age or his speech or forgetting what he's talking about. It was those young women and men and the communities of color in the streets. Those young women and men and those communities of color in the streets are what Harris needs to win, that 2-4% of the vote. They are not going to stay out of the streets. The fall's coming. You're going to have millions of young women and men and students and communities of color back at universities, shutting them down, occupying buildings. So this, you know, sure, the genocide is going to play, quote unquote, the political card in this particular case. But I don't think we're going to have a situation where Harris is going to be able to jump up and down and say, poor Zionism, poor Israel. I don't think it's going to happen. I think to the contrary, this is someone who's a political monster, a political beast, like all U.S. political leaders. This is someone who's counting votes. This is someone who understands very clearly that if she's got any chance of beating the other Zionist named Trump, if she's got any chance at all, she's going to have to make some agreement with the young women and men in the streets. It may mean imposition, partial imposition of the Arms Export Control Act. And again, I'm not saying she's doing it because she's kind or principled or is exuding some sort of humanity, but she's doing it because she counts votes. So ultimately, at the end of the day, it's those young women and men in the streets, it's the solidarity with the communities of both Palestine and Lebanon that I think are going to improve a bit, but not out of principle or purpose, but out of electoral politics.
Okay, well, necessity may come to the fore after all here, but this whole issue of the genocide isn't gonna go away, at least not on this program here. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I wanna thank my guests in New York and in Beirut, and of course, I wanna thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.